The amazing Red FM Circus rolls into Skibbereen all week, and we've got the greatest shows in town. Roll up for the world's strongest breakfast show, Ray and Jay. The derring do of Dave Mack. The musical extravaganza that is Bill More Music Burke. And the glittery show busy that is Izzy. All marshaled by the one and only, the ringmaster, Neil Prendeville. Skibbereen, we're taking over. Cork's hit music station, coming soon to the streets of your town.
With Vodafone Gigabit Broadband, connecting communities across Cork.
Red FM.
We are live from Skibbereen. I am in our brand new studio, which is going to be here for the week. If you know Skibbereen, feel super value. We're right next door, opposite the permanent TSB. You can't miss us. You'll see Red FM Jeeps. You'll see our Red Patrollers, Katie and all the gang. Colm O'Sullivan here as well. And it's all part of our Vodafone Town takeover. Let's kick off Monday, 5...
Yeah, that's how it all began, and what a week we had down in Skibbereen for our latest Red FM Town Takeover, with thanks to Vodafone. It was our third Red FM Town Takeover of the year, having already been down in East Cork earlier on in the summer in Youghal. Then we were up in North Cork in Mitchelstown, and this time it was the turn of beautiful West Cork as we headed down to sample the delights of Skibbereen and the surrounding areas. And my first port of call was with local man Cian O'Mahony in the tourist office to get a flavour of some of what's on offer in Skibbereen and around that general area.
How has the summer been for everyone in Skibbereen and West Cork in general this year?
Well, I feel in Skibbereen it's not been too bad, I suppose. It's been down in last year. Yeah. Start of the year, April, Easter was very, very good. Excellent. And then it levelled off a bit in June. Weather was cold. Into July was very, very good due to the Arts Festival. And August has been very good. Quieting down a small bit now for the first week in September, but we have the Taste of West Cork Festival coming up, which is starting this Friday and runs until the 15th of September, and that will definitely bring people around again.
It's a beautiful part of the world down here, obviously, in West Cork. What are some of the main attractions if people do come and visit the area?
Well, in Skibbereen Town itself, I suppose the three main attractions in Skibbereen Town would be the Heritage Centre, which tells the story of the famine, the West Cork Arts Centre. And also we have on every Saturday morning, we have probably the best farmer's market in Ireland.
So best in the world.
Best in the world. And that's on every Saturday morning. And that's in the town itself. But around here, within 20 minutes, we have Baltimore, Castle Towns and Union Hall, Ballady Hobbs, Skull, all these beautiful, beautiful villages. And I suppose the jewel of the crown would be the Mizzen. Mizzen Peninsula outside the fastness of, and you can see the fastest rock from there. It is beautiful. And then you have the fastest tours, which are fantastic as well, which go from Baltimore. And any other one? I suppose Loch Eyne. Loch Eyne, yeah, of course. Loch Eyne, yeah. Loch Eyne is the jewel for Skibbereen, I suppose. It's only a few minutes down the road.
So many stuff. And where have you been finding most of the tourists come from? Are they kind of from other parts of Cork? Are they from around the country? Are they from Europe, America? Where?
Mostly Irish would be our big visitor into this office here, and from all over the country. Got a lot from the southeast issue, would you really? Believe it? Kilkenny, would you believe it? Amazing. And our next biggest visitor would still be the British. Yeah. Even though they're down on last year and years gone by, but they are still our biggest foreign visitor, we'll call them. And the last number of years, Germans.
Germans, really?
Yeah, the Germans have taken over in third place as our best visitors into this part of the world from the French. Yeah, so... Yeah, they come from all over the world. I've had from Japanese in here. Like, you know, it's amazing where they come from. Yeah.
And you mentioned the Taste of West Cork Festival is coming up. It's starting on Friday. That obviously brings a lot of people into the town, doesn't it?
It brings a lot of people into the town and to the area, especially because it's all over West Cork now, you know, it stretches from Castellón Bear all the way up to Bandon and into a lot of villages in we'd say East West Cork. And so, yeah, we'll definitely see an upsurge again in visitors into the town for the festival.
So Cian there telling us about lots of the delights of Skibbereen and the general West Cork area. And as the week went on, we went and visited many of those. But Dave Mack was down during the week as well for Dave Mack's Drive, and he spoke to some of the locals in our pop-up studio on the main street in Skibbereen, including a local climate change activist who's just 18 years of age, doing her Leaving Cert. And Dave spoke to her and kind of struggled to pronounce her name as well.
Music Station Red FM, Dominic Fike, Three Nights, here on Dave Max Drive, live from Main Street, Skibbereen, for the Red FM Town Takeover. Nearly done, but I just want to say hi to Aisling Neenail. She dropped in today, but she'd emailed us yesterday to say, this is from the kids and staff of Gael Scull, Driscoll Usulawan in Skibbereen. We're delighted you've come to visit our town. Our posh the ogre were wondering if you could pay our school a visit whilst you're in Skibbereen and visit our brand new Gael Scull. Looking forward to hearing back. Falsha is Fihe Quig on Skibbereen, Aisling. Well, I've passed it on, and I'm pretty sure we'll be able to do that over the course of the week, but it was also nice to meet you, Aisling, and your kids when you dropped into us in this studio here on Main Street, Skibbereen. Now, let's talk to someone from here.
Local legends on Dave Max Drive with Cafe Eco at the Web Workhouse on Winthrop Street. Cork's only 24/7 cafe and internet centre of excellence.
Alicia O'Sullivan, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. How are you doing?
Not so bad. What's your mum's name?
Sadie.
I've correctly pronounced your daughter's name now. Alicia O'Sullivan. Alicia, you have an interesting story. First of all, what age are you? You're still going to school here. What's your story in life?
Yeah, so I'm 18 and I'm attending Skibbereen Community School here in Skibbereen, and I'm actually doing my Leaving Cert this year.
Fantastic.
So very exciting.
You, like many, are concerned with where the environment worldwide is going.
Yeah.
Have you been inspired by anyone in particular in terms of your activism?
Yeah, so of course Greta Thunberg is a massive inspiration to all of us climate strikers. We've had massive representation here in Skibbereen with Sinéad O'Connor being a massive leader of the Irish strikes. And yeah, I guess I've been engaged in climate action for a few years now through my activism, and the climate strikes really... I took a shine to them and I got involved, and yeah, that's where it took off, really.
Well, I see the echo. We're describing you almost as Ireland's answer to Greta Thunberg. It's amazing the criticism she seems to be, like, feted in many quarters, but equally, like, do you know, they have this phrase, like, you know, play the ball, not the man. In other words, tackle the topic and not the individual in question. That doesn't seem to be the case for those who appear to be trying to chop down a brave 16-year-old girl who's standing up for things that she believes in, which is something similar to what you're doing too. What has been your story in that that's led to you being featured in The Echo and us chatting this evening as local legend, and what is it you're going to be going doing?
Yeah, I think it's really hard for Greta, especially because of her autism and everything, more so maybe than I would suffer from it. But she's definitely an incredible figure, and I think people will put down anything they don't understand or are ignorant towards, and that's definitely coming out a lot in the media and publications, and Greta's been so strong in not answering that. For me, yeah, I guess my involvement in it here locally as well, I've been involved in two campaigns, the Save Our Skibbereen campaign and the Protect the Kelp in Bantry, so it's kind of been uproots towards
both Skibbereen. Of those which have been successful campaigns, I mean, we can't go into the detail on them. I mean, in a way, when I heard a plastic factory in Skibbereen, like, who even thought that was a good idea? Why did that even where did that even come from?
Yeah, it was a crazy situation here locally in West Cork for both, and the amount of money that was raised by the towns and the locality was just phenomenal. It was a real spirit of community fighting against the two, which was just incredible.
Oh, I see my time rapidly running out. Look, the key thing is you are now going over to represent Ireland in the UN alongside the likes of Greta Thunberg. What is it you'll be saying there?
So I was chosen by Department of Foreign Affairs to represent Ireland at the UN Youth Climate Summit in New York on the 21st of September. I'll be meeting with 600 young people from all around the world, and we'll be discussing climate change and hopefully coming up with strategies and policies that we can feed back at the main event.
And will you have any particular specific point that you'll be trying to put across as such?
I think it will be, again, the same message from the climate strikes, that we need system change and we really need governments to take action right now, so that we can implement it at national and local levels.
It's an absolute pleasure to chat with you, Alicia O'Sullivan, from here in Skibbereen in West Cork. Much success when you speak and represent Ireland at the UN Youth Climate Summit. Thank you for being my local legend this evening.
Thank you.
That was Dave Max Drive, live in Skibbereen. Just one of our many shows that we broadcast from our pop-up studio that we had set up next to Fields on the main street in Skibbereen, all part of our Red FM Town Takeover with thanks to Vodafone. The main man, Mr. Neil Prendival, was down during the week as well, and I actually went with him to visit the Skibbereen Heritage Centre. What a fascinating place, and just really, really historic, and everything there telling you all about the history of West Cork and the general Skibbereen area, and in particular, how it relates to the Great Famine. Neil went on a tour.
This week, our town takeover is the town of Skibbereen, and the Red Patrollers are handing out free Jacob's Club Milk bars all week long. You can keep an eye out for them on the streets of Skibbereen, and they're sharing all sorts of photographs on social media. Very happy place. They're currently outside our studio next to Fields Supermarket in Skibbereen, if you're in the area. We've got cash to give away with Bandon and Skibbereen Credit Unions as well, so you can shop local with Skibbereen and Bandon Credit Union. And there's loads of goodies and Vodafone up for grabs in town today. Our patrollers are down there with Otterbox phone covers. And also, I believe that the lads are broadcasting live from Skib in the morning. There'll be Ray and Jay on breakfast. I was down there on Tuesday. I visited the Heritage Centre there, which features the Famine Museum and exhibition. Now, last time I was down there, I really enjoyed it, but it was years ago, and they've moved on so much now. They involve tech now, and they involve audio-visual displays and headphones and lots of audio descriptions. You know, it was an incredible visit, because the Great Famine in Ireland produced the greatest loss of life in the 19th century in all of Europe. Some say that 1 million died. Others would say there was closer to 1.5 million. We certainly know that there were earlier famines in the 1800s, but 1845 to 1849 was when the population was decimated, particularly those who relied on the potato. Now, it may not seem all that relevant now anymore, but I think it has a DNA effect on us, even to this day. But the potato was a real superfood. It really and truly was. And, you know, it contained everything that people needed, who were laborers or poor or involved in agriculture or the subdivision of land, to survive, and to survive very well, actually. A real superfood. So when it failed, the first year wasn't too bad, but in subsequent years, it had a devastating effect on all age groups of people who were poor. Now, in urban areas, it had less of an effect. Like, for instance, I know for a fact that, say, for instance, on the Blaskets, there was no famine because they had an awful lot of other aspects that they could deal with for food, and that was fishing and what have you. But enough of me. I don't want to hog up any more time. On Tuesday I was down there, and I hooked up with Terry Carney, who's the manager of the Skibbereen Heritage Centre.
Oh, son, I loved my native land with energy and pride, till a blight came over all my crops, my sheep and cattle died.
Welcome, Neil. I'm Terry. I'm manager and curator here at Skibbereen Heritage Centre. Just wanted to give you a little tour on the Great Famine in Skibbereen. The first thing to start with is the landscape you're looking at now bears no resemblance to what it would have looked like on the eve of the Great Famine. If you were coming through here, there was no green grass. It was all brown, tilled earth, and it was chock-a-block full of people. There were villages everywhere. It looked a completely different landscape. Our population in the 100 years prior to the Great Famine, our population went from about 2.5 million to between 8.5 and 9 million. It was the biggest population increase in Europe. And the enabler of that, or the facilitator of it, was the humble spud, the potato.
The wonder food.
The wonder food, exactly. We talk about kales and avocados today. That's the wonder food. About half of the pre-famine population lived on potatoes and a bit of buttermilk. And it was not a stupid thing to do, because studies have shown that Irish men of the time were taller and broader than their British European counterparts, so they were very healthy.
Yeah, it had everything to sustain life, didn't it? Exactly. And to allow people to work hard and to, you know, sow the fields and live difficult lives with very bad weather and horrible living conditions.
Yeah, and very easy to grow, didn't need any tools, but the volumes that they ate were extraordinary by our standards. A man would eat up to 14 pounds of potatoes a day. And they weren't only dependent on the potato for their food. In this area, about 40% of the population lived in one-room cabins. They were called fourth-class houses. And these tiny little dwellings, they were the very poorest of the poor, they shared them with a pig or another small animal. And what potatoes they didn't eat themselves, they fed to the pig, the surplus potatoes. And at the end of the year, they sold the fattened animal, bought a bonnive, and with the difference, they paid their rent. In Britain at the time, the Industrial Revolution was going on. There was child labour. There was people working 10, 12, 14-hour days. Then they were coming over here to Ireland, seeing abject poverty in areas like this. But it was a very lively, vivacious social society, and people were happy. And growing potatoes was hard work for a couple of months a year, but there was a very high level of unemployment. So they were coming from an ethos of work, 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 over here to see abject poverty, but seemingly people being happy. And they were being blamed for that, which was unfair. First year of the Great Famine, Sir Robert Peel was Prime Minister. set up a series of measures that worked very successfully during our 1822 famine, but were an abject failure during the Great Famine. And they consisted of creating work to enable people to earn money so that they could buy food. And the work they created was hard physical labour, building walls, roads, bridges. A lot of people died of cold on them. A lot of people weren't paid, so people would be working for weeks and not being paid, and it was an absolute disaster.
The famine roads that exist today, we can still walk them.
We can indeed. If you're in any small, single lane boreen anywhere in Ireland and there's a straight patch in it, you can almost be guaranteed it's a famine road. And hundreds of thousands of people died on those. And he imported Indian corn, maize, as we know it, to serve as a food for the poor. Initially it caused all sorts of problems because people had never seen this before and they didn't know how to cook it, but later it became a staple diet of the poor. It was the next government that came in under Lord John Russell in autumn of 1846. He refused to import food because of the laissez-faire economic policy. There was a 90% failure of the potato crop that year.
Which year?
1846. 1845 no one died under Peel. 1846 there was a 90% failure. This was not an Irish famine. That's a misnomer. This was a European famine. This famine was all over Europe. In the entire continent of Europe, 100,000 people died. In Ireland, 1 million people died.
Why?
But that year, when he refused to buy food, and by the time they realised there was a 90% failure, it was too late to import food because all the other countries were out in the international market buying it. So there was a winter where even if you survived the roadworks, even if you got paid, there was nothing to do, you just died. And the following spring, they came up with the solution, which was based on a model that we'd started here in Skibbereen, soup kitchens. Here, just opposite us here in that building over there, one of the first large-scale soup kitchens in Ireland opened in November 1846. At its height, it fed 8,600 people every day. And the government policy...
So families would come... Or crawl here or whatever.
Crawl.
From bowls of soup.
So many accounts you can read. People coming with their tins and thing, crawling up because they didn't have the strength to stand upright. And new soup kitchens, government-run soup kitchens, opened all over Ireland in the spring and summer of 1847. And they commissioned a French chef from the Reform Club in London, a Monsieur Soyer, to come up with the recipe for the soup. It was 1/4 pound of beef in 2 gallons of water. It was 10% of the calorific requirements for an adult male for a day.
It was a weak broth, wasn't it?
Kept them barely alive. Yeah. And by the summer of 1847, the famine stopped. It was paused, and 3 million people were getting daily rations of soup. But in 1847, a series of things came together to get them to pull the plug on those soup kitchens, and it was then on complete and utter disaster. And it was against the economic principles of the time to give somebody something for nothing.
But extraordinarily, Queen Victoria was the second highest donator to the famine. I think she donated something like £3,000 or £4,000.
2,000, and that was under pressure.
Let's just talk through... And I don't mean to in any way kind of make this a kind of like a Hollywood epic or anything, but the hardness of life as people were starving and landlords were literally, or their agents or their bully boys or their thugs, were evicting them from their homes.
The landlords were so far removed from the people, they weren't even on a different planet. So the very poorest of the poor were paying 40 shillings. Yet by the time that went to the tenant farmer paid 32 shillings to the middleman, and the middleman paid the landlord just 3 shillings.
So for the 40 shillings that the poorest of the poor gave...
The landlords were so far removed from the people, when you're saying awareness of what was going on. A lot of them weren't resident here, a lot of them weren't resident in Ireland. Some of the worst evictions of the Great Famine were in estates managed by middlemen.
What happens then when the potatoes fail, and then people find that they have no food and they can't pay their rent? What happened then?
The first year and the second year, they kind of got away with it. But in 1847, part of the new act was proposed by Lord Gregory, an Irishman, to our shame. He was a landlord in the west of Ireland, and he proposed the infamous Gregory Clause, the Quarter Acre Clause. And it said that anybody who had more than 1/4 acre of land had to give up their land to get into the workhouse. And the other flip side of that is, if your valuation was over £4, the landlord was liable for your rates. So here you are now a landlord, you have people not paying you rent for 2 years, now they're costing you money. So mass evictions happened. And people went along with the evictions because the only way they'd get help, and all that was left at that stage, was the workhouse, because they closed the soup kitchens, and they needed to get a ticket to get into the workhouse to say they'd given up their land. 500,000 people were evicted from
And there's
house.
Many, many photographs and paintings of that, of course, of bailiffs going in with almost like ramrods, and then heavy thugs taking down the roofs, yeah, and deep thatching and, and then you had people on the side of the road literally dying.
And living in little tiny little under furze bushes. They died in the streets, they died in their homes, they went up into the graveyards themselves and lay down and waited to die. At the same, it was the perfect storm. At this stage as well, the workhouses were full. So the workhouses were full, they were thrown out of their home, and they the so-called people of the roads, they started walking.
Of all ages?
Everyone. They started walking. You can read the descriptions. They walked in silence and they shuffled. One of the terrible effects of starvation on a body, one of them is a psychological effect, because the most expensive organ in your body is your brain. It takes 25% of your calories to run. So in the latter stage of starvation, you're no longer functioning as a rational human being. Your hue goes dark. You shuffle. And that's all they did. They just walked towards the coast. They just walked trying to get help.
Oh, well, do I remember that bleak December day when the landlord and the sheriff came to drive us all away. They set my roof on fire with their cursed English spleen. And that's another reason why I left old Skibbereen. Oh, Father dear, I oftentimes hear you speak of Erin's Isle. Her lofty scenes and valleys green, her mountains rude and white.
Surely there would have been the gentry, or those that would have been somewhat more affluent, witnessing this on the sides of the roads and doing nothing to help?
A lot of them did do a lot of help.
How come over a million people died?
Just try and imagine the scale of it. Here in Skibbereen, we had fantastic people. We had Dr. Dan Donovan, R.B. Townsend, J.W. Clarke. They formed the Skibbereen Committee that opened the soup kitchen. They sent a delegation to London. The scale of it is hard to imagine. There were 6 million starving people.
But why didn't the people in Skibbereen fish?
The first year of the famine, the 1845 and 1846, was a very stormy year, and a lot of the fishermen pawned their nets because, of course, they thought it was just going to be a one-year famine, and then, of course, they never got them back. The islands and the coast didn't do quite as badly as inland areas.
Yeah, Blaskets never had a problem with famine.
Yeah, because they had the means to fish and the knowledge to fish. They had no means of storing fish.
Do you really think that it's enough to say that they didn't fish or get a rod or some sort of fashion and implement to feed their family from rivers because they didn't have nets or because they were ignorant?
No. Rivers and streams, inland wateries, were the property of the landlord.
Oh,
you weren't allowed to fish on those anyway. They were the outrageous. They were the crimes.
And then for those that just had enough and just wanted to emigrate, did they go, another one from Cork and another one from Tralee, did they go from ships down here?
They did. They went from Bantry. We had a visitor here this morning whose ancestor left from Bantry in 1847. They left from Baltimore. They left all along the coast. They got out however the hell they could.
Did landlords down here help?
There was no assisted emigration in Skibbereen other than one ship owned by a grain owner that had an empty ship going back. And of course the workhouse girls, there was 110 little girls sent from the workhouse to Australia under the orphan girl scheme. But no, there was no landlord assisted scheme
and
from Skibbereen.
These were coffin ships, right?
Coffin ships were mostly 1847 going into Canada. They were ships that were coming in from Canada to Britain carrying lumber, and then they carried the Irish back as ballast. And 100,000 100,000 people made that journey in 1847 alone, and one in three died on the journey or shortly thereafter.
But it wasn't just to Newfoundland. Didn't they go into Ellis Island?
The east coast of America closed their ports to the Irish for a few months, actually. Because of disease. And they went up into Canada, and it was a much cheaper passage to Canada. They went however the hell they got. It wasn't an emigration. It was an exodus.
It was genocide, wasn't it?
I don't agree with that word.
If you allow a million people to die and do little or nothing, that is genocide.
I don't agree with you. There's a definition of genocide, and there's different steps in genocide, and the Irish famine does not fit in with that. If you want to say, particularly the British administration of the time, particularly Trevelyan, Charles Edward Trevelyan.
But he did say that there are too many of them anyway. So that's genocide. Yes.
What he did was through his principles, and it served them well what happened. It was genocide by apathy, if you want to put it that way. But the British administration, and particularly the Russell government and the Trevelyan and his boss, Charles Woods, that whole axis is completely blamed now. I mean, if you read any books. Because, as I said to you, the 1847, the soup kitchen showed that they could have kept people alive if they'd wanted to. But the closure of those is a complex. It was, you know, it was political. It was Irish arriving in Britain. It was, you know, against the economic principles of.
They portrayed us as monkeys and gorillas in Punch magazine. That was the image the British were seeing. That was the apathy. I mean, more aid and more assistance and money and food came from American Indians.
Yeah. The British Relief Association brought £400,000 worth of aid into Ireland, which is 46 million in today's terms. And individual British people came here and endangered their lives so doing. The two young students from Oxford, there was a lot of individual. It was a key core in the British administration, not the British people.
My name is Christopher Bishop. I come from Dartmouth. Irish history in England is not as prominent as it should be, as taught in the schools, in the curriculum and so on, because the two countries are linked together. And I think that if people understood more about the island of history, they would understand why things like the Troubles and the Good Friday Agreement, yeah, and importance of all these sort of things. I mean, all these kind of things like the famine in Ireland were kind of things that actually... Yeah. Built up this resentment.
Why should you feel ashamed of something that happened how long ago, 170 years ago?
I mean, okay, I mean, I wasn't around when the famine started, but I mean, I come from there. What I don't understand is why the Irish wouldn't rise up against us more than they did, because I think it's absolutely outrageous what happened. I mean,
the rising before that would have been 45 years ago in 1798, yeah, and that was crushed, of course. Yeah.
And there was a rising during the Great Famine, but it was a disaster. People didn't have the energy, but history is being downgraded all the time, and history gives perspective, gives reason, gives understanding. The downgrading of history makes people repeat the same mistakes.
Yeah, they say that the one thing we learn from history is that we learn nothing from history.
Yeah, well, I had, earlier on this year, I had the loveliest man. He came out of here with steam coming out of his ears, and he was English. And he was actually shaking with rage. And he works for the UN High Commission for Refugees. And he was stabbing the piece of paper, and he was saying, that's exactly the same as they tell us today about North Africa. That's exactly the same as they tell us today about Syria. So exactly the same arguments are being used as Trevelyan, Russell, all of these used. So we're doing it today.
But I mean, from my point of view, I walk through here, I'm horrified of what I see here. I feel ashamed. I'm ashamed of my forebears for what they did.
Your mother too, God rest her soul, fell on the snowy ground. She fainted in her anguish at the desolation round. She never rose but passed away from life to mortal dream, and found a quiet grave, my boy, in dear old Skibbereen.
Lest we forget, Terry Carney, the manager of the Skibbereen Heritage Centre, and an English tourist who was with us as we had our walk around, and Terry Carney certainly knows her stuff. So Skibbereen Heritage Centre is open every day right across the year, and you can get details and opening times and what have you. They also have a wonderful library there, and you can buy some books and take away some brochures. I was all the better for going away in many ways to be reminded of those that went before us, and the trials and tribulations and death and starvation that they went through.
Neil Prendeville there on a tour of Skibbereen Heritage Centre. And if you are heading down to West Cork, Skibbereen Heritage Centre, well worth the visit. They really bring the history of the general area, its people, and the effect the Great Famine had on the area to life in the Heritage Centre. So well worth checking out. I went out in a boat during the week down there as part of our Skibbereen town takeover. We went on the Baltimore Sea Safari. We went out towards Cape Clear, towards Shirkin Island, saw whales, saw seals. But I wasn't the only person who took to the water down there during the week. Our own Izzy Showbizzy was down there later in the week on Thursday, and she went out to look at the Fastnet Rock and checked in live on air with Philip Burke.
Cork's hit music station, Red FM, was youth, and that is long time no see. We are live from Skibbereen, and our own Izzy Show Busy. Well, she's out on the waters looking for some, because she is on the Cape Clare ferry right now. Izzy, what's happening?
Hey, Phil, it's Izzy Show Busy coming to you from a boat today. Yes, we've decided to go and see the Fastnet Rock Lighthouse. We're actually just passing Cape Clare at the moment. I'm here with loads of Red FM listeners. And we've decided to go on a little bit of an adventure for a Thursday afternoon. So I'll tell you if we get to see some dolphins and sharks and bits and pieces like that a little bit later on. But I can't wait to see the lighthouse. I've heard so much about it. So I'll tell you more details in a little while.
For your writings, and that is Castles. Izzy, you're just back in from the boat. How did you get on?
Can I first say our studio is looking fantastic, because it's my first time down in our Skibbereen Town Takeover. And I feel like we're like literally on telly, because we're up on stage. We have these beautiful white chairs, a big gorgeous desk in front of us, and you can see everyone up and down the street in Skibbereen.
But you know what we're missing? We're missing hair and makeup. Which you're so used to. Yeah, which you're so used to doing your stint on Virgin Media. So tell me about who was the gang that was with you on Cape Clare Ferry?
Okay, so we brought on 8 listeners that all won a seat on the boat last night on my show Red Hits. So we brought them all on, and it was a fantastic day to be sailing around as well. We had Karen, who gave us the tour on Cape Clare ferries. So we were on this, it's called like a fast ferry.
Yeah.
So we got down and we went past Cape Clare. Sun was splitting stones, and then we got to see the famous lighthouse, right? So this is called the Fastnet Rock Lighthouse. It's really, really famous. I learned loads about it today. It's the largest lighthouse in Ireland and the UK, and it's called the Teardrop because it would have been the last kind of like port of call people would have seen from Ireland on the Titanic.
Okay. All right. So historic kind of value there.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone was delighted. We had a great afternoon. Mark is actually going to put up a video a little bit later on, so stay tuned to our social media channels about what we got up to and what the tour can kind of offer and stuff like that. But it was fantastic.
My big question is, did you get to see sharks? Because you were telling me this earlier on. You were going to go, oh, I'm going to see some dolphins and seals and possibly sharks. Did it happen?
We didn't see any sharks, but we did. There was definitely a few dolphin sightings. But I'm going to go back again because I want to see a shark, like, you know what I mean?
All righty, baby shark Izzy, there you go. Don't forget Top 7 at 7 tonight. She's got your Red Hit. And I have got Dua Lipa on the way with New Reels, live from Skibbereen for a Vodafone Town Takeover.
More music with Philip Burke.
Izzy Show Busy out on the wild high seas of West Cork, heading out towards the Fastnet Rock with lots of Red FM listeners as part of our Red FM Town Takeover, just one of the many kind of West Cork tourist attractions that we sampled during our week down in Skibbereen. And she checked in with Phil, who was live from our pop-up studio on the main street in Skibbereen. Then Friday morning, as the week drew to a close, the two messers from the morning, Ray and Jay, they were down in the studio on Friday morning, broadcasting live on Breakfast with Ray and Jay, and as always, they had €5,000 to give away on Cork's Secret Sound.
Right, time for Secret Sound. 1850 104 106 is the phone number. That's 1850 104 106. If you want to play Secret Sound, I'll play this for you. This should work now. Here, listen. Oh, there it is. Right, we got that. Right, so, oh, hang on, stalling. There it is. Right, 1850 104 106. If you want to get on, give us a call now, and I'll click this then, and then someone should be on the radio with me. Red Radio, hello, good morning. Who's this?
Hi, it's Tanya. How are you?
It's Ivania or Tanya?
Tanya.
Right, okay. I still don't know. It's Ivania or Tanya? Tanya? Tanya?
Yeah, Tanya.
Oh, Tanya. Where are you this morning, Tanya?
I'm going to work.
What are you working at?
In 2H.
So very nice. What are you doing there?
I'm just clerical.
You're what?
Clerical.
A clerical, oh, very nice. That's good. Keeping everything working, keeping everything operating. There's a lady making her way to us in the studio here. She's waving into us. Hello, lady with the glasses. She seems happy. Tanya, let's do Secret Sound. I'll play this for you. You tell me what it is. I'll give you 5,000 big ones this morning. Have a listen. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's you're bouncing the ball off the floor.
Bouncing a ball? Any kind of ball, like a rubber ball or a football of some kind?
A rubber ball.
It's not at all. Listen, thanks for the call, though. Have a good day.
Thanks, bye.
Cheers, darling. Much love. Bye. Drive safe. Bye. Right, let's go again. Red Radio. Hello, Red FM. Hello, good morning. Who's this?
Roman here. How are you?
Who?
Roman.
Roman or Ronan?
Roman, like a Roman Polanski.
Like Roman Polanski. No, you're not like Roman Polanski. Let's just say like a person who lives in Rome.
Roman Abramovich.
It's Roman Abramovich, the owner of Chelsea. Let's avoid the dubious name associations on breakfast. Mother of sweet divine Jesus. There's kids listening. Right, let's do it. Secret sound, Roman. I'll click on this. What do you think?
Is it that when you're pressing the biro, like, you know, turning on and turning off the party?
Pressing a biro. Sorry, I'm after turning you off for there a second ago. Sorry, it's a pressing a biro, like a clicking of a pen, is it?
Yeah, something like that.
All right, so you mean like a click, not a, because a biro specifically would not have a click, would it?
No, it'd be
for me a biro is static. It doesn't have a clicker.
Not a click.
Who's this lady? Think she's walking into? We're on air, madam. We're on air. Give us a second. Or come on in. Come on in out of the rain. We're not going to leave you soaking outside in the rain. How are you? Sit down there. Grab a pew. Sorry, Roman. I'm being distracted here. We're live in Skibbereen this morning as part of our takeover, and Jesus, we're being mobbed. There's a pitch invasion. Is it a biro clicking? It's not, sir. Thanks for the call, though.
All right, thank you.
Cheers, buddy. Much love. Bye, 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 bye. We can do one more. If we click on that, it should. Hang on. Oh, things are very ropey around here this morning. Red Radio. Hello, good morning. Who's this?
Hi, Sinead.
Hi, Sinead. How are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
Sure. Look, I'm surviving. I drove to Skibbereen this morning in the dark. Google sent me up through the highways and byways. I love the Google Maps. Because
I got a couple of mountains on route down.
That's it. A beautiful scenery in the dark, of course. And I was on a little boreen that had grass in the middle of the road this morning.
Oh my god.
And I was thinking, I think there's a couple of nerds up in Dublin, Google HQ, tax dodging nerds sitting up there avoiding pain. Their corporation tax.
I'm hiding out in the mountains.
That's it. Skibbereen. And their two biggest priorities are avoiding tax and screwing me on my journey to Skibbereen. All right, Sinead, let's do secret sound. Have a listen to this. What do you think?
Is it, do you know a remote where the batteries are kept when you open and close the back of it?
The clinky latch on the back on the battery bit of the remote.
Yeah.
Sinead, it's not.
Perfect. Thanks, guys. Have a lovely day.
You too, darling. Enjoy your weekend. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Bye, 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 bye. We'll do it again Monday morning. Red.
Ray and Jay broadcasting live on Breakfast with Ray and Jay from our pop-up studio on Main Street in Skibbereen as part of our Red FM Town Takeover with Vodafone. They almost drew it to a close, but there was still one more show to come, and Philip Burke wrapped it all up on our Town Takeover live from our studio on the Friday afternoon.
Cork City Music Station, Red FM, James, Vince McMorrow and me and my friends. And that is it for day 5, our final day here at Red FM Town Takeover in Skibbereen. Thanks to Vodafone, but more importantly, thank you for listening and to everyone here in Skibbereen that we got to meet since Monday. Dave Mack getting you home. And don't forget Monday when you wake up.
Cork's Red FM.